This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. Each year, millions of students are suspended from public schools, a longstanding disciplinary practice that research shows often fails to improve behavior and disproportionately harms students of color. Last school year, about 14% of Delaware students received suspensions, with students of color facing out-of-school suspensions at higher rates, according to the state's annual report on school discipline improvement. In his new book, Suspended Education, School Punishment and the Legacy of Racial Injustice, University of Delaware sociology and criminal justice professor Aaron Kupchick explores how these disciplinary practices are tied to racial inequality and have long-lasting consequences for students. Delaware Public Media's Kyle McKinnon sat down this week with Kupchick for more on suspended education and why school suspensions may do more harm than good.
There's been a lot of discourse recently around school discipline and student behavior here in Delaware and across the country, making suspended education about as timely as can be. And spoiler alert for our listeners out there, suspending kids out of school is, in nearly all cases, a bad idea, no matter what time period we are living in. And that's where I want to start things off. Why has suspension always been a commonly used disciplinary tactic throughout time?
Yeah, I began doing research for this book with a similar question in mind, which is, why do we use it so frequently right now? Because as you said, in most cases, it doesn't help the student, it doesn't improve behavior, it doesn't help student learning for the other students, it doesn't help the school long term, certainly doesn't help parents or communities. So how would this come about? And I look back, and what I found was that before desegregation of schools, we didn't really use it very frequently at all. So it wasn't always used, but in the decades after the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court decision that resulted in school desegregation across the U.S., that's when it started being used. So I did some intense research in a few different sites. One of them was Newcastle County, Delaware, and found that suspension only became common as Black students entered formerly all-white schools, and they were relatively unwanted there. And so school decision makers kicked them out by suspending them.
Yeah, and that racial component, that very strong racial component here, all of what we're talking about is essentially rooted in systemic racism. I do want to note the U.S. Government Accountability Office reported recently that Black girls receive more frequent and harsher discipline in school than other girls. And the same goes for Black girls in Delaware, according to a State of Our Union report that one of our reporters, Abigail Lee, recently revisited here on The Green. But we didn't need either report to tell us what history has already shown with why Black students of any gender are disproportionately suspended. Touched on it, Aaron. Can you dig a little deeper into why Black kids are disproportionately suspended and suspended for the same kinds of misbehaviors as their fellow white classmates?
Yeah, there are a variety of different reasons why in the contemporary, so why today they're disciplined more frequently than white students. One of them, unfortunately, is implicit racial bias. And here, this is a term that's often used and often misunderstood. It doesn't mean that people are ill-intended. It means that we're human beings, and we all carry around with us our own biases and preferences that we might not even know. So implicit racial bias refers to that momentary, very quick reaction where somebody might be a little more nervous or feel threatened by a Black student than a white student, where they might be a little quicker to assume bad intent by a Black student than a white student. This implicit racial bias affects everyone. And so that's one reason. Another reason is that has to do with where people go to school. And schools that tend to house more students of color are often under-resourced, have a lot more problems at stake in terms of the issues they have to confront on a daily basis, and they tend to be more punitive.
And there are some rather significant implications here. Suspension doesn't end at the single act of suspending a student. So, what are these kids up against? What exactly do they face as, you know, as far as risks or implications go if they find themselves suspended?
So if we think first and foremost about what it's intended to address, which is behavior, students who get suspended tend to act out more in the future, not less. So it backfires in terms of correcting their behavior. And you might say, well, it helps a teacher do their job, right? So maybe that's a secondary or equal to the first goal. If I'm a teacher and I'm trying to teach to a class of 35 students and one is making that difficult, well, I might want to get rid of them, at least for a few days. But what research finds is that high suspension schools actually have worse average test scores than lower suspension schools, even when other things like school demographics and student behavior are similar. So it's not actually helping student learning and teachers' ability to teach for the rest of the class. For the student that gets suspended, though, more directly to your question, not only does behavior get worse, they suffer academic penalties, meaning that they're missing class, and they're marked as a bad student, and they're less likely to succeed in school, less likely to graduate, more likely to be held back a grade. Down the road, we can see consequences. Students who get suspended out of school are at greater risk of arrest, eventual incarceration. There are all sorts of problems. In a study several years ago, a colleague and I even found that students who get suspended are less likely to vote and volunteer in their communities 15 to 20 years later.
Right. Well, the ripple effects here are pretty clear. They're wide-ranging, meaning parents and families are also touched by this, which is something you mentioned. But what does that family what does that impact exactly look like for families?
A number of years ago, Colleen and I, we looked into this in some depth. We interviewed dozens of families from in a school district down south whose children had been suspended from school long term and even expelled. And what we found was that those families really paid the price, man. They really suffered. We talked to parents who lost their jobs because of having to miss work so many times to pick their kids up from school. And keep in mind, if your child gets suspended out of school, that means you get a phone call saying, come down here right now to pick them up. A day or two later, you likely also have to attend a meeting at the school to discuss the behavior. And then a day or two after that, you have to accompany them back. That's for one incident. And these were all families whose kids had been involved in many incidents. And because low-income families are at greater risk of going through all of this, the people we talked to were primarily lower wage earners, often minimum wage, who don't have the job security and the ability to tell their boss, I have to take off for 3 hours and I'll be right back. The boss will find somebody else, most likely. So we talked to people who lost their jobs. We talked to people who became separated. I mean, I spoke to a couple families who sent their child to live with relatives in another state so that child could continue to get an education. We spoke to families who had internal family conflict with one child taking up so much of the attention and energy, that caused problems. We spoke to some who literally had developed mental health and even physical health problems because of the stress of dealing with it.
All of this being said, then, what positives, if any, can we point to in suspending a student? Is there anything that we can tangibly, hang our hats on as far as the positives go?
That is a more difficult question to answer. I mean, if a student is being violent and is causing harm or is at risk of real risk of causing harm to other students, then I believe it makes sense to remove them from the school. But what the data show are that we don't have that many cases that are that serious, right? And so most of our suspensions don't need to be resulting in a suspension. Most of the incidents that result in suspension could be something that result in a more restorative and less punitive consequence. So, are there any instances where it is productive I wouldn't say the word productive, but I would say necessary, perhaps.
I do want to note that in Delaware, a task force in charge of finding solutions to the state's student behavior and school climate issues delivered its final recommendations in the fall following these increasing reports of student behavior incidents and issues around absenteeism. It does remain to be seen how effective those recommendations will be. But how do we solve this then, Aaron? Is it through improved teacher training to handle conflicts better and to meet kids where we're at? I know we touched on that. Do we need these maybe separate third party, special third party groups to come in and handle certain conflicts? Do laws and policy need to change? Is this a answer D, it's all of the above kind of thing. I know you also write that we need to recognize how we got here, if we want to go forward and fix today's problems, recognizing this history and how this is so deeply rooted in systemic racism. So how does this issue get addressed?
Well, first of all, the broader term that you just mentioned is exactly right. We live in an era where many believe it's more comforting to put our heads in the sand and pretend that we live in a world where horrible things haven't happened. And that's not true. And those horrible things like segregation and resistance to desegregation, they have an impact today. And that doesn't mean it's anybody's fault today. And that doesn't mean that people should feel bad about it. It means we just need to clearly open our eyes and recognize why we are where we are so that we can do better for our children. In terms of what kinds of practices would do better, there are a whole host of different practices that can help. Nothing's going to magically fix it, particularly because student misbehavior is a real problem. And kids come to school, particularly today, 5 years after the start of the pandemic, they come to school with so many problems and complicated lives that a teacher can't fix, but the student takes it out on the teacher often. I have great empathy for teachers dealing with this on the front lines today. So, we're not going to fix everything, is one thing we have to realize. But what we can do is make progress by better supporting teachers first and foremost. We also can implement practices like restorative justice or positive behavioral interventions and supports in ways that are implemented with fidelity, meaning that they actually follow the program as it's designed, not an add-on that a school wants to claim they do this program. And so they suspend a kid and then have a 10-minute meeting with them. So there are a variety of different programs that we can use. All of them follow common threads. And to really boil it down quite a bit, that common thread is that they see students as children to be cared for, not problems to be managed. And they really seek to help children solve the problems that cause the misbehavior, rather than seeing the misbehavior as just something that is part of them and they need to be excluded.
Thanks to UD Sociology and Criminal Justice Professor Aaron Kupchick, author of the new book Suspended Education, and R. Kyle McKinnon for joining us on The Green this week. Up next, Arts Playlist, where we head to the Mezzanine Gallery at the Carvel State Building in Wilmington for a look at a new exhibit inspired by a local artist's old family photo album. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.